Empire of the Suns.
Suns. Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zuerman. It is our last regular season podcast, hopefully. And I say hopefully because if we're breaking one for the last three games, that means something probably went wrong. We don't like that, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good reason we'd have one. So, yes, let this be our last one.
Devin Booker scores 71 points in a game. We would do a breaking episode for that, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's going to happen, Kevin. So, as I said, we'll quickly get into it here. They've got three regular season games left. They play Portland on Thursday, and then they have that road back-to-back in San Antonio on Saturday and Sunday, which, much to the delight of the sports department across our both radio side and website, we still don't have tip times for yet. We just don't know when the game's going to be yet. So, only like 3 days away. It's fine. We can wait. We're patient, Kevin, aren't we?
I live in chaos. I love it. It's fine.
With those three games left, it almost certainly looks like the Jazz are going to lock up the one seed. Now, where things get, I guess, if you want to call them mildly interesting, the magic number right now is, I believe, going to be, it's two right now still for the Jazz to clinch it. Because if they won two games, the Suns wouldn't be able to catch them to 52. And then obviously if the Suns lose twice, yeah, that's how the magic numbers work and all that stuff. The Jazz remaining, they have Portland, Oklahoma City, and Sacramento. And this is kind of the double-edged sword of the play-in, Kevin, is that we'll talk about this in a minute. The Grizzlies and the Warriors are going to play each other in their final game of the season, which could determine who's 8 and who's 9, and that's super fun. But what's not fun is like the Jazz need to lock the one seed to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have lost 40-something games this year already, or Sacramento, or these other teams that have been eliminated from the playoffs. But anyway, to get to that point, the Jazz, they've got Portland tonight, but even after that, they've got Oklahoma City and Sacramento. So even without Mitchell and Conley, it looks like they're still going to be able to hold on to the one seed. With that, we can get into the standings a little bit later, but just wanted to preface that off of the Suns' loss to the Warriors, that it kind of looks like the one seed making a late race for it again is pretty much donezo. The Suns have lost three of their last four games, Kevin. This is the second time they've done this season, and the first time since late January. They have done so not exactly as cases happen, Kevin, when teams lose basketball games. They have done so not really looking like themselves. There is, I don't know if it's Lakers anxiety that crept up on people, and now that the team's also losing with Lakers anxiety, it's making people kind of freak out. But Devin Booker was asked what his concern level was at for the last two losses heading into the playoffs, and he basically acted like, I don't even have a concern meter, because he said, I'm not concerned at all. Are you concerned at all, Kevin?
Should I put it on a 1 to 10 scale?
Sure. Yeah. That was Cameron Cox who asked. So let's do that.
I don't know, like a 5-6. And if I'm using full, like it could be 1 if I'm really concerned, or 10, I guess, really concerned. I think the Laker fear is being combined with any worries by some people on one side of the spectrum. I think I'm kind of in the middle where, like, regardless of it being the Lakers or not, you should be concerned, because I think they would have to go through the Lakers at some point. But I also don't think, like, the sky's falling and they wouldn't be able to, like, just get back to what they were doing. I think, again, the play-in games, that's going to give them time to rest up, because to me they just look like a tired team. But also I'm not on the other side of the camp where people are like, oh, they're just hiding stuff. They're not running their stuff, because their offense has been fine. When you look at the numbers, their defense has been bad. And even if you're not, you know, scheming and you're just playing straight up defense, like they're getting blown by, they're not in
they're
the right spot.
Than that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm in the middle there. I think they can fix it. I think really it is human nature too, where it's, we got this spot. It looks pretty set. And just they're tired, and that's kind of what happens sometimes in these positions you're in.
I am at a 4, Kevin, and I would say that there is a 3-point buffer that I am a 3-point deduction, I should phrase it as, that I am using, because the Suns all season have shown an ability to collect themselves, reset, and get back to the way that they play. They have done that all year. For that to go away right now would be pretty not unforeseen, or I don't want to say unforeseen, but like uncharted, like never happened before, that type of thing. Nothing like that. But it would certainly be unexpected for them to suddenly, this is the time when they can't like gather themselves, reset, and get back to the way that they played. Because again, like I just said, they've done that all year. When they've had a tough loss, when they've lost two in a row, whatever it's been, they've been able to do that. And I certainly think that they are going to be able to do that over the long period of time they're going to have. Because again, depending on how the standings fare out the last couple of days here, depending on how the Portland game goes tomorrow, they could look at those Spurs games already knowing the fact that they're going to be the 2 seed and rest guys on Saturday and Sunday. One of those games, both or none, but either way, there's some fear there for sure. And why I say it would normally be at a 7 is because the reason there's a big reason why I'm so confident in this team, and it has a lot to do with the fact that they've been a great defensive team. But now I have to drop that to good, Kevin, because in the last 6 weeks, they've been a very bad defensive team. They're 25th in the league in defensive rating since the start of April. Now, that is also the start of April we were talking about when their schedule got very, very difficult. But at the same time, these are the teams you're going to be playing in the playoffs, Kevin. These are the high caliber teams, and they have not defended them at a very strong level. I just see an overall lack of defensive play. It's not like DeAndre's drop off from that level that he found in late March is the reason why this is happening. It's nothing like that at all. But they're just not executing the way that they do, Kevin, which usually is just playing really freaking hard. Because the Warriors game to me, did you see the screenshot of Steph having like 4 Suns basically trying to block his shot when there was like 50 seconds left, and then Wiggins got that layup going through Ayton? Do you remember that sequence?
Yeah.
At the end of the game. That was the epitome of their night defensively, because what happened was they were so worried about Steph. And then when they were done worrying about Steph, they were almost kind of done worrying about defending in a way that was really odd for them, where it was like they were so... Yeah, like they were not only were there like closeout angles and all that kind of stuff way off and letting the points in the paint get way up, but then they weren't rebounding either. And there were possessions. Gosh, Kevin, there was one where Wiggins like crashed a miss with like 4 minutes left, and there were four Suns standing there. And I thought Wiggins was still going to get it because of the way the night was going and just the way guys weren't rebounding. It was really surprising to see from them. And Monty Williams said it in that way after the game, where he's like, we are not a team that gets outworked, but that was a little bit of what happened tonight too. So for me, again, like guys are tired. It's this part of the season, but losing what has made them a special team for me is being a great defensive team. And I think that there's a big, big difference between just being a good, okay defensive team, being top 10, top 15, whatever it is, and being top 5 like they were. They've only dropped to like, I think, 6th or 7th overall in the year. So like their work prior to April was fantastic. And I think that they're still going to be able to be a great defensive team, but it does not help that that is the way that it is trended, because the recipe for this team to be a contender for me is a top 5, top 10 defense with something close to that with the offense. If it's closer to 15th than 5th, that's fine. It is not being 2nd in offense and I believe 20th in defense, which is what they've been since the start of April.
Yeah, and I agree completely. It's their identity is that end to me more than whatever you think of their offense. And again, their offense has been not absolutely terrible. Like there's always the concern that Book and CP3 are going to get you too much out of just that ball movement that makes them so fun to watch on that end. But that's going to happen in the playoffs. And then those two guys are guys you trust anyway. I'm sure we're going to have games in the playoffs where people are mad that Book took a post up fadeaway to tie it or win it or go ahead late in the game. That's just going to happen. But you don't get in those situations unless you play really good defense. And especially last night, I remember watching the SportsCenter clips, and that's obviously Golden State just hitting some tough shots down the stretch and things like that. Or maybe not that tough, but their defense kind of broke down. Like the first half, they got that lead because it seemed to be there. And I think that's why I'm leaning more toward the they will be fine, because you just see the difference in the first half versus the second half, where they let them go on a little run. And then things kind of just like fell apart when they were going down the stretch. So to me, that's why I still feel pretty good about it. Matchups obviously matter a lot. And like our last podcast episode, there's, you know, roster concerns, I guess, that you could say on my end, that I feel, you know, the lack of a true shot blocking big might come back to haunt them, but we'll have to see how Monty handles that. And again, that he's probably has some ideas of stuff he's going to try, but they just want to get to the playoffs. And I think that's where we're at right now.
I want to ask you a question by giving my thoughts on what I've seen from DeAndre lately to kind of wrap up our section on Suns thoughts specifically. And I don't want to go too deep on it, because I think what we're going to try and do is next week kind of preview the plan and see like what types of matchups. And that's where we'll talk more about like, okay, like going small, Aiden matching up and like the Suns in general matching up with certain teams and so on. And then once they actually get their playoff matchup, of course, we'll really dive into that. But for me with DeAndre, what I've been seeing the last couple of games, I don't want to say this is annoying, but it's just become the standard of my least favorite discourse over the entirety of Suns Twitter in the past couple of years has been the DeAndre only has five shots. You need to get him the ball more and run more plays for him and those types of things, because I do not believe that people are actually paying attention to where DeAndre is at on the floor at all times. I believe now, with that being said, I think that there are a lot of times where they're not getting him the ball enough and not running enough stuff for him. So I think that's true sometimes, and a lot of the time, in fact. But in that Laker game, I saw them running stuff for him early, and the Lakers ran defensive stuff they weren't ready for. And I also just saw DeAndre not really fighting for post position a lot. Now, Kevin, fighting for post position for 4 seconds and not getting the ball must be really annoying. And you might not want to do that sometimes when that happens all the time. But with that being said, when you're not touching the ball, when they're playing small against you, I think you need to be doing it. And I did see a handful of times where the Suns, again, as David Nash has been pointing out, they've been running a lot of default stuff. They've been running a lot of kind of ISO stuff instead of like they've been running their standard offense, as opposed to like the wrinkles of it, like the elbow sets David brings up that makes like their offense kind of unique and helps bring out the most of their guys. But in their default looks, I mean, a dozen times or more where DeAndre was on the block, the ball was on that side, and he wasn't necessarily fighting for post position. That's what I was seeing. And just seeing that, I don't know if that's because he like the play is absolutely for him to not get the ball. But I have seen times where they've run those sets and run that default action. He's been sealing a guy off and then he gets it in there. Am I looking too much into this? I don't want to suggest that he's lost confidence that he's going to get the ball anymore or anything like that. But in terms of that specifically in the last 2 to 3 games, I have seen a little bit more of that, where it feels like the only way to really get him involved and where he believes he's going to get the ball is on dives to the rim and offensive rebounds. It doesn't really feel like the post touches are that much for him anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if it's scheme or whatever. I think they really have just gone away from it. And it feels to me more like rhythm too, where like they made an effort early in the season when he was like not there on offense. They made a hard effort at some point just to start feeding him, right? When he had those monster games.
We talked about that, right? I said, like, is Chris Paul going to lose games to get him involved in the game? Like that's what it felt like to me.
And I think you're right, where there are times when he's not, you know, doing the thing where he just outruns the other center and gets the low post position and puts that effort in. I don't know if I've seen that from him, which he sometimes is really good at, and they still don't get it to him. So I'm not going to put much on him there, because look, at the end of the day, he's the type of player that you need to throw him the ball. And this team continues to not show that they're not great at getting him the ball. Chris Paul will throw bad passes to him, Book has honestly been pretty not good getting in the ball. Mikal might be the best after Chris Paul in getting in the ball. And again, like, they just flat miss him when he does put in effort. So I think when you – it's all the other guys too. When you have tired legs, you're ready for this thing to be done. Like, I'm seeing, like, what you're saying. Like, there are lots of possessions where it's like, you have a small on you. Why aren't you, you know, just really calling for it, working hard, and he's just standing there with his hand up? Yeah, he can do that more. But also, I think this team kind of got out of the rhythm of looking for him. And it's not just him either. It's other guys. Their rhythm has been off. Again, despite the numbers on offense, I just think they're kind of in a funk right now on that end.
Yeah, I like the way you phrased it about like a minute ago into what you were saying with specifically like blame. I don't understand the insistence for people to put blame on someone individually or just the group as a whole or whatever it is. We can just sit here and analyze basketball for 20 minutes, 40 minutes, however long this podcast goes, without blaming an individual specifically. And I think that, as always, with discussion points like this, it can lead to making it sound like we're blaming him or calling him out or whatever. And again, that's not what we're doing. I was just – that's why I phrased it that way, Kevin, because I wanted to present to you what I was seeing, and I wanted to know what you were seeing and what you kind of thought of what we were seeing. And I like – what you said at the beginning too, because that is something that we have both talked about on here for months, is that it must be, and this is where people again might think we're saying, oh, DeAndre's teammates hate playing with him, all this kind of stuff. It must be a combination of frustrating and disjointing to play with someone like him, where you are trying to get him the ball a lot early on in the year, like you said, and it's not really working out. You're finding him three times in the post in 4 minutes, and two of those times the ball is getting deflected by his defender for a steal. The other time, it's there. You're looking for him, and he's not looking at you. And then you start looking away from him, and now DeAndre's the other way, where he's like, I'm open, give me the ball. Like, yeah. I'm 8 feet away. I have Maxi Kleba on me. Give me the ball. And they're like, and they're just not looking for him anymore, because for the 5 minutes they were looking for him, it wasn't working. Yeah. And it's just not gotten to the, I think we said this.
And then he stops trying to get even position, you know, that.
Yeah. And it kind of goes downhill. So gosh, it's one of those things where blame, and you want to blame him. And it's like that. It's such a disjointed, is the word I'll come back to. It's been a disjointing experience getting him involved in the offense over the course of the year. And saying that without putting blame on anyone, which is what I'm going to continue to do, it goes back to kind of what I think we talked about, Kevin, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, where we're at the point now in the season, 50 games into the year, where this kind of is what it is. And they have proven they have an inability to get him consistently involved in the offense. Whether that's on him more, Monty more, Chris Paul and Devin Booker more, it's impossible for us to say. We can only judge what we're seeing on the court, and it's a variety of all those factors like we're saying. And none of that, Kevin, you know what? It doesn't really matter, because it's just what the bottom line is instead, which is that they can't get him involved. Which brings us to what I was teasing, which is what we're going to talk about more next week, and what we saw last night in the loss to the Warriors, where I said this on our podcast, I'm pretty sure, but I've DM'd this to multiple people when we were even 3 months ago, like, rank these teams in terms of the teams you wouldn't want to play. And I always, like, my main reply to a lot of people with the Warriors was, well, what if they play Draymond at the five and now the Suns have to look around and go, well, now what do we do? And that'll go into more of what we talk about next week and so on to go on. Is there anything from, I think Cam Johnson's health is something we should briefly mention. We'll get the injury report here in less than 90 minutes. So by then, check my Twitter. I'll have an update on if he's questionable, out, whatever it is. But he has missed 3 games now with a right wrist sprain. That was clearly affecting his shooting numbers when he got listed with it like 2-3 weeks ago. So he's been going through this for a while now. And then he had the nasal fracture as well. His health is obviously, I think, like, in terms of something to watch over the last week here, is the main thing to watch. But did anything else you wanted to jump on before we just look at the standings before we go?
No, I mean, we mentioned it last week, the big situation, Frank playing over Dario a lot now, that also could be a health thing. We don't know.
Monty has said it's not, but I mean, you could also just say Dario's saying he's healthy and he's just pobbled, you know?
Yep.
It's hard to say.
Yeah, I think we, man, I'm just kind of at that point where I just want to get to the playoffs, see who they're matched up against, kind of see what talking points we're going to have going into that. Because like the last question I asked Monty last week, or the only one I've really asked him in a while now, is just, what do you want to see? And he was basically like laughing. Like, I'm just trying to get to the end of the season and win games, because how teams are presenting themselves now is nothing like how they're going to present themselves in the postseason. And I'm assuming that means he's included in that, where he's got tons of ideas, ways to attack different types of teams, and he just wants to get there.
I thought of this a couple of days ago when we were looking at the Lakers game and looking at this last like 6-7 games of the year and being like, are the Suns going to be that type of team that doesn't show a lot in these matchups and just kind of keeps a couple secrets, or at least doesn't let that team get an in-game flow of what they're doing? And then I was like, well, he worked with Greg Popovich, so and then Chris Herring had the post yesterday about the tightening the screws thing, which you loved, that was a thing that Pat Riley used to do. And then you remember like Monty's playing career, he played under Pat Riley, and you just think about all like the head coaches. That's one of the great things about Monty, is that like the coaching tree of like elite head coaches that he's played or coached under is pretty remarkable. So not to say that Monty is incapable of doing that if you wouldn't have had those guys' experience, but just based on like learning those situations already from afar, yeah, he's hiding some stuff for sure against the Lakers and the Warriors. Like, he's not showing everything. None of that nonsense, Kevin. You hear me? No amateur hour over here, son.
No.
Not happening.
In fact, he's got some things.
Okay, let's look at the schedule. I mentioned the Jazz and the Suns now. I'll have a West watch up on ArizonaSports.com by the end of Wednesday night. So if you're hearing this at any time, really any time, just either look for it, be ready for it to come out, or read it then, because I'm going to get into a couple of the situations to watch for. The big one for me, one of the bigger ones, really the only one to touch on at the top half of the conference, is that I believe it is the Clippers who play Charlotte on Thursday at 4 p.m. And that game really matters, because the Clippers and the Nuggets are only a game separated, Kevin, and the Nuggets own the tiebreaker. So the Nuggets have been sitting here at 4, the Clippers have been sitting here at 3 forever, but the Nuggets could still jump them. And both of those teams have pretty much nonsense left in their schedule, except the Clippers for that Charlotte game tomorrow. And then I believe it is Houston and Oklahoma City for the Clippers after that. Those are two horrible basketball teams that they should be able to easily beat. But if they lose to Charlotte, that gives Denver the chance to win out and take the 3 seed. And you're thinking, well, the Suns are at 2. Why does it matter? It matters with the bracket. You got to start thinking about the bracket now and who you could potentially avoid in the second round. And like, for instance, like not playing the Clippers or the Jazz or the Lakers until the Western Conference Finals, instead of meeting them potentially in the first or the second round. Like, that's the type of stuff you got to be open with that brain about, Kevin. But the main race we're watching, of course, is the Lakers. A loss tonight for the Lakers combined with a win for both the Blazers and the Mavericks would lock the Lakers into seventh, because if they lose one more game, they will not be able to drop past the Warriors, because I believe it is the Lakers who own the tiebreaker over the Warriors. The Lakers are resting LeBron James and Anthony Davis tonight, which I think has a lot to do with the fact that the Rockets, Kevin, are 5-41 in their last 46 games. They have 11 players on the injury report tonight. So I think that even you like want to say shenanigans and like we're all making our jokes on Twitter, but I mean, like, it's the Rockets. They're going to beat them regardless tonight. So it mainly comes down to their last two games. And also it actually doesn't actually at all. That's completely wrong, Kevin. False. Because if the Blazers and Mavericks just win two games, they're done. Because after tonight, all those teams are going to have two games left. So if the Blazers get to, and the Mavericks get to 42 wins, I'm sorry, that's wrong. If they get to, if they get to 42 wins, like, the Lakers can't do anything. Cause the Lakers right now, if they win out, they can get to 42 wins, but the Blazers and the Mavericks own the tiebreaker. So all the Blazers and Mavericks each have to do is win two out of their last three, and that will lock the Lakers into seventh. And, of course, the Blazers and Mavericks have a ton of reason to do that, because they're avoiding the play-in. Like, we're treating the play-in like it doesn't matter for the Lakers, but it matters. It still matters. Like, the Blazers and Mavericks, it still absolutely matters to them, and they want to avoid it. And then we've got the fun with the Warriors and the Grizzlies, where it looks like Golden State has New Orleans left before playing Memphis on the last day of the regular season, and then Memphis plays a back-to-back against Sacramento before that meeting. It will very likely come down to if the Warriors, whoever wins that game, is going to be the eighth seed. Anything stand out to you the most out of what I was talking about that interests you?
Just notably, Portland does have a tough schedule. They play at Utah tonight. That's ESPN. At Phoenix, obviously, tomorrow on TNT. And then Denver to end it. So that's...
with what we just talked about. Yeah, Denver could need to win that game.
So that's the... Portland potentially would be... the one that might drop to seven, and then you get a crazy Dame, Steph, all the marbles. That would be fun. Also, it would be fun if Steph just beat the Lakers. I mean, that in one game, and that would obviously not eliminate them, but they would have to win the next game. So, like, yeah. I mean, any – the Golden State game, as we saw last night, I think you got to worry about them, because I think I saw their net rating and – over what, maybe the past month or something, and it was, did you post that? I don't know where I see things. The Warriors
what were you asking about?
Oh, just like the Warriors net rating over the past 2 weeks or
yeah, sorry if I'm butchering the name, but Sam Esfandiari, he's on the Blue Wire Network of a podcast as the Warriors one. I don't know what it's called, but I should know because that's rude. Since James Wiseman got hurt, they're number one in the league in net rating and defensive rating.
Yikes.
Makes you think if a certain team didn't have to worry about playing I'm just kidding. Just kidding, Kevin. Jokes. Banter. I'm not even going to extend that joke. A lot of people probably didn't get it because I didn't take it far enough, but the real ones out there understood what I was saying, the joke I was making. Yeah, number one in net rating, number one defensive rating. It just basically comes down to the fact that they can fully be the Warriors. They don't have to worry about these lineups with Wiseman, who is a very talented and raw guy who they have to find certain things for, who has had a very up and down season. Hearing, I believe it was Nick Friedell was on Zach Lowe's podcast like a month or 2 months ago talking about his season. It just sounded very similar to Ayton in terms of the ups and downs, the consistency and how much fans were expecting out of him, the pressure for him to perform even more with how guys are playing behind him like LaMelo Ball and so on. So the Warriors are going to be a tough out, I think, no matter what. And I'll have more on that in West Washington going off those numbers and stuff. But they're looking legit. And so are the Blazers. If the Blazers beat the Jazz tonight, that's 9 wins out of 10. But with what you just mentioned, and going back to Shams' report of like they're going to do this like the Premier League last day and then they're not, meaning that like all of the games are basically going to be at the same time on Sunday to add stakes to them. Because let's say the Clippers, the Nuggets still have a chance to hop to three, but they see that the Clippers have already beaten New Orleans earlier in the day, then they really have no reason to go full blast and really go for it against Portland on that last day of the season. If all the games are at the same time, all those teams are going to go all out because they don't know what's happening in the other game. I think that's kind of the point they're going for, but now it sounds like it might not happen just because they were like, wait, testing. Hold on. Please stop. So yeah, all of that sounds like a lot because it is, and there are so many scenarios to go through, and we'll kind of end it there, but just keep an eye out on the site and then on both of our Twitters and all of that kind of stuff. If you're looking for that kind of the day-to-day developments, we'll be tracking them. I would be shocked if the Lakers lost tonight. And like the Blazers still have to beat the Jazz. The Blazers, I think, are favorites in that game just because of how great they're playing and who the Jazz are missing. And the fact that the Jazz in their last, I believe this is their last two wins, or it might be 2 out of 3, but Bojan dropped like 48 and then Clarkson had 30 something in that overtime game. And it's like, they've just gotten to the point now where they need like heroic performances from these guys to just kind of hang on. That's the point they're reaching. So I think that's what it's looking at. And I'll have more tonight on like how Portland's looking. They've really clicked together since getting Norman Powell. Norman Powell, the X factor to the Western Conference, Kevin.
Who knew?
Everyone, except you, I guess. Just so obvious. Do you think New Orleans is going to make a run for the 10 seed, Kevin?
No.
Me neither. I believe they get eliminated tonight with just a loss regardless. San Antonio plays tonight too as well. They play against Brooklyn. So a couple more things to figure out, but it's pretty, for nothing absolutely being set at all, Kevin, there's actually like quite a bit that is set. But we'll be back next week to, I guess, review the regular season on Monday or Tuesday, but more likely what we're going to be doing is looking at the play-in scenarios, which will likely be the Lakers, Warriors, Grizzlies, and Spurs, what to watch out for, what we think of certain matchups the Suns could get, because, of course, that's for the 7-8 spot. Suns will very likely be at 2, and we'll see who winds up at 7. Those will be very fun games. Man, Kevin, the D-backs can't stay healthy, huh?
Why'd you have to end it on that note, man?
Oh, sorry. Schedule hype! Football games are going to be played that we already know are going to be played, but now we know when they are. Fake content day.
Fake content day.
It is content.
Some real content we've made here.
Good fake job. Content, real content. You know what it is at the end of the day, Kevin? Content.
It's content.
Content is king.
The content.
We will have more content for you on this podcast feed next week, because we will be talking about gasp, Kevin, playoff basketball. It's back.
But yep.
No, I've been telling people, I think somewhere between the final buzzer sounding when they're going to, like, right before they play the intro, or the buzzer sounding for the national anthem, maybe then or until tip off for that first game when we're sitting there at Phoenix Suns Arena, but still not setting in it at all. Maybe want to see the playoff t-shirts lined up everywhere, but I don't know. We'll do it together, everyone. We're going to go into this brave unknown together. We'll all be there with each other, making sure everyone's okay. And we'll do that next week on the next episode. Goodbye.